Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Haven't heard me in like 2 weeks, I presume. Well, that sort of makes sense, as my cat literally destroyed the only cable that I had that connects my microphone to the computer, so I couldn't record. And it turns out the small town on the eastern border of Latvia, just near 20 kilometers from the Russian border, doesn't really have a store that sells mini USB cables. So I had to go to Riga, and I did a lot of medical stuff there as well, just, you know, so that it would fall in line with other things that I had to do. First off, well, I posted about this on Facebook and Twitter, but yeah, due to my bizarre and complex medical conditions involving my weird-ass metal knee, total debt is about 1,400 euros, out of which about 500 were gladly donated to me by the people on Twitter, on Facebook, and when I posted this. Well, I still have about 1,000 euro debt, so if you can help the show financially via pressing the donate button on our webpage, or just PayPaling me, or messaging us and we'll tell you all the details, or just basically not giving up on our Patreon, that would be really nice. We would truly appreciate that, because, well, I need to eat as well, and the rent's not gonna pay itself, you know. And, well, I have to pay my editor, and I have a lot of financial things to worry about. So if you can, if you possibly can, then please do support the show. But the idea was that I spent all this time making the boat episode, you know, the cruise boat, because in Riga I stuck in my friend's place. The problem is, as I returned happily home yesterday, very tired and, well, to be frank, puking constantly and having a massive problems from all the medication that I have to take, turns out that I have left the USB flash with my script, together with the book that I was about to use in Riga. Now, a buddy of mine is going there this week later on, and he'll just pick up my stuff from my buddy's other friends in Riga. But, yeah, guess where that leaves me. I haven't been able to record for 2 weeks because of health issues and because of, well, overall nervousness and technical difficulties. And at the same time, I fucking left my script 400 kilometers away. That's just amazing. Amazing in a very bizarre, weird sort of way. But, well, hey, that allows me to do a breather episode and actually talk about more political stuff. But I work really hard on that one, and that's going to be the next one as soon as I get my script back. Because, you know, rewriting 30 pages of text without a book that I use to write the script from is a bit of a pickle, so to speak. It's not a nice thing to do. But yeah, again, thanks to everyone who supports the show, and please continue to do so, and we really, really need your help right now. But this time, well, like I said, as my original plan kind of went away due to my own mistake, admittedly, but still could have done a bit better, I'll be discussing Russian politics with you, because, well, been following those, and there are some very interesting events happening right now at this moment. And I've also applied for a job. Yeah, I've applied for a scientific project that will research how the life went on the smaller border towns of the Soviet Union itself. Namely, I'm going to have to go and interview older people in Karsava, which is literally 2 kilometers away from Russia right now, on how their life was impacted by the Soviet Union and how the Soviet government arrived there in the 1940s and how their everyday life went. So I'm glad that I've been hired to do that, and that's going to happen from March to September. And then my favorite news source, which I'm going to be using in this episode as well, Medusa.io, posted a job offer, whereas they're looking for someone to be their English news editor, basically someone that takes their news in Russian and translates them into English for wider audiences. And that's exactly what I'm doing. That's literally what I'm going to be doing this time for the most part, and I hope that they actually do hire me. That would be a pretty neat kind of solution to a lot of my problems. But yeah, let's get on with the episode, because, wow, it does feel pretty weird. Well, makes everything better, because turns out that if you have a 2-meter or 6-foot cable, then it lags much more than a similar one that is just 3 feet long. Hey, I've been doing this for a while, but hey, even I get surprises. Anyway, after all of this pretty long intro, let's get on with the show, and I promise you a better one next time, because I was about to look for the Flash, and I got confused, because I was expecting to do this for the next step, but hey, what can you do? The first part of the bizarro news that we're going to be talking about is the fact that the Russian government is buying the government's share in another government-owned bank. Just like in the Soviet era economics, which is like, I guess, the second episode that we did, like from the very beginning, and it wasn't one of my best episodes, but it basically explained how the Soviet economy worked. The Russian government is now buying shares from a bank that's owned by the Russian government to give it to the central bank, which is also owned by the Russian government. So they're basically money laundering money from themselves to give it to themselves. That might sound strange to you, but if you remember that Soviet economy worked just the same way, basically money was shifted through ministries, all the while controlled by the central bank who printed the money, and everyone was basically, you know, just responsible towards Mr. Khrushchev. Like, my example that I gave in the very early episodes was the fact that if the defense ministry needs something moved, they go to the Ministry of Transportation. For example, let us move 3,000 tanks from one end of the Soviet Union to the other one, and then the Ministry of Transportation give the bill to the Ministry of Defense, and basically, and everyone goes to Khrushchev to confirm this deal, and then Khrushchev approves of it. Basically, it's like taking money from one pocket of your jacket and then putting it in your other one. It's something like that here, because it's a bizarre event. Because you see, the Russian government right now currently is preparing to buy the Russian central bank's share in Sberbank, because, like, the Russian central bank owns a 50% stake plus a single share of Sberbank, which is the Russian kind of largest private customer-oriented bank, and the Russian government is now buying that stuff from their own central bank for their government. It's a bizarre thing. Now, and like I said, this on paper instantly looks like, you know, just about moving money from one pocket to another, but turns out that Russian government and its laws are quite a bit insane enough to basically make this a actually legit strategy to free up a lot of rubles and state funding for welfare payments. At least that's what they're saying. Everyone basically knows that the money's going to go into someone's pocket and be stolen, because right now the Russian government's running with a massive, massive deficit of the state budget. They have extra dollars lying around everywhere that are technically, they exist on paper, and they're just not being spent and put in as a Federal Reserve, even though everyone knows that they have been stolen. But, you know, no one cares. Basically, this whole complication thing about the welfare payments originally stems from a Russian legal measure called the quote-unquote the budget rule, which states that all oil profits above a $42.4 per barrel rate must be channeled into the National Wealth Fund, which is in Russian shortened to FNB, rather than the government budget. then the FNB has the right to invest up to 50% of its own value in Russian companies. So the FNB's money can be spent only if the total size of the fund exceeds 7% of Russian GDP. At the moment, the fund is approaching that figure, but even if it surpasses the 7% mark, the government will only be able to spend any newly available funds on roads, bridges, ports, and other infrastructure projects, or, well, basically steal it, which is what they're going to do, because the spending on infrastructure is, yeah, that's a big sham, and that's not happening. And at this point, the government actually wants to spend some of the money that it has on some welfare, because, you know, Putin's changing the constitution, and he wants to appear super friendlier than previously, so he kind of needs, well, to give something out, and although the Russian budget on paper has a major extra amount of money collected over the years that are just there for emergencies, everyone who knows anything about Russia will tell you that money, yeah, can be forgotten about, and, well, probably does not exist anymore. It's been invested in offshore funding, it's somewhere in Panama, or invested in real estate in the center of London. The need for welfare is quite real because the poverty rates are increasing and people are just not living as well enough as they used to. And at this point, when the referendum about the constitution is coming up, you have to give some form of carrot to your people. Otherwise, it's all going to fall apart. I mean, they look at the Soviet experience daily and they make great judgments about that. So you see, like I said last month, Putin sent this formal message to the Federal Assembly asking for increased welfare payments. That happened at the same time when he shifted around the constitution, which he spoke about previously. Because, yeah, you kind of want to push the people to actually less shenanigans with totally screwing up the elections. It looks shady, right? And who needs that if we could actually throw some bread and circuses the general population way? And, well, then we're going to have to do less shady things. So the executive branch officials estimate that the welfare, which is going to be increased funds for mothers and impoverished families, will cost about 4 trillion rubles, which is $63.2 billion, by 2024, with only about half of that sum already accounted for in state budgets. To cover up at least part of the remaining expenses, well, they couldn't take it from their budget, which is overblown, but it's all stolen. So federal bureaucrats have devised a sort of a workaround for the budget rule. While the rule limits the FNB expenditures severely, it does allow those funds to be invested in liquid assets such as, guess what, Sberbank shares. Right now, the government's stock in this very massive Sberbank, because Sberbank is, I don't know, like a Wells Fargo or Bank of America. It's of that size, except in Russia. And that's contained within the central bank's balance, where the shares are valued at a significantly higher price than their current market rate. The Russian executive branch will now buy up those shares using the FNB funds at the market rate for a total exchange value of about 2.8 trillion rubles, which is $44.2 billion. And technically, there is no law that would prevent such a purchase from taking place. The central bank and the executive branch are totally and completely legally separate from one another, and apparently it's fairly common in Russia that they buy assets from one another, even though, well, quite obviously, looks quite shitty. This might quite scare you because we're going in economical territory, but it's basically, well, I looked at the statistics of the people who listen to this show, and some of this economy shenanigans is something interesting because, well, I have some people who listen to me, like Christopher Neuberg, from whom you should buy yarn. I'm going to give you a nice little rundown and ad of what he does once again, but Christopher Neuberg is the guy from whom you should buy yarn, and his project that he's knitting, and he's awesome like that. We'll leave more stuff in the show notes, and we'll mention him more in the next episode. But just remember, Christopher Neuberg, I mentioned him in previous episodes, go buy his yarn. That guy, I know for sure, also has some investments in Sberbank, and this might be interesting because that is just gonna go and exchange its owners. Now, the big trick is, as it's always used to shift off some money and steal some cash, liquid assets from it, is that the fact that the difference between the market price and the assessed value of these Sberbank shares will yield a 1.6 trillion ruble or $25.3 billion profit for the central bank. And by law, 75% of that profit must be transferred to the federal budget, which will enable the Russian government to spend the excess funds on well put in social welfare projects, which are there only in place to basically, you know, make people slightly happier and not think about all the freedoms that they're being taken away by, and instead, you know, to spend more attention following on the fact that, well, they might actually be able to afford something. Because currently, we're looking at a situation where a veteran of Afghanistan war, his retirement funds and his pension wasn't indexed since 2012 for 8 years. And, well, he was slowly drifting into poverty, but then in the Irkutsk district, these nice people in the Russian government decided to, well, increase pensions a bit, which they did, by 137 rubles, which is about $2.5 at this point. So what this guy did is just literally waltz up into the next meeting of his city council with a couple of rolls of toilet paper, and he literally gave these people two rolls of toilet paper, because that's what, well, all you can buy for this meager amount of money. But that's the economical news. We're going to get to a bit more sadder, and somehow yet more fun news, as we have some extreme courtroom antics. And there's a very big courtroom case that I'm not going to be touching about on this episode, which is the Sitchevoy thing, where seven people, ages 23 to 30, were placed in prison for 85 years total for apparently starting an anarchist movement in Russia. And it's just nonsense, because they were basically strikeball fan group, and one of the evidence against them was the book by Karl Marx, Das Kapital, which apparently proved their anarchist tendencies, and I'm not joking here. And also, well, like, they didn't do anything at all, and the planning evidence was weird. It's just that this is a very loud case, and I don't know enough about it, but I will want to touch upon it on a future episode. But if you know about the Sitchevoy thing, haven't forgotten about it. But I have another interesting court case that I really want to introduce you to, because that sounds something like, you know, you'd expect from American action movies, more like, instead of, you know, a normal standard court case. See, the thing is that a Chernobyl liquidator that had turned into a Russian penitentiary boss committed suicide in a Moscow courtroom. Viktor Svidirov, who formerly led the, quote, Vehicular Transport Division of Russia's Federal Penitentiary Service, or FSIN, committed suicide on February the 12th inside Moscow's Cherkhatovsk District Court. He had been sentenced in an extortion case. And an RSB correspondent reporting from inside the courtroom said that Svidirov successfully smuggled a firearm into his sentencing hearing. He was convinced of extorting 10 million rubles, or $158,000, from former FSIN Deputy Director Alexander Zapochnikov. The sentence given in this case was 3 years in a prison colony. And according to the Telegram-based news outlet MASH, Svidirov had stage 4 cancer. MBK Media reported that he had worked as a liquidator following the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, and both the defense and the victim's representatives requested leniency in this case. The Moscow City Court emphasized following Svidirov's death that the sentence he received was lower than the 7-year minimum provided for in Russian extortion laws. Another Telegram-based outlet, Baza, wrote that Svidirov was able to bring a pistol into the courtroom because the metal detector at the entrance to the building was not working. Although Moscow City Court people basically state that it was operational, but it doesn't really matter. A bailiff searched Svidirov manually but found only a flask filled with alcohol in his pocket. Now, Baza, our nice friends there, hypothesized the former prison official might have brought the flask with him intentionally to ward off any further search that might have unearthed the pistol. And Open Media wrote that security services for the Cherkhatovsky District Court are provided by a private company called Cossack Guard that is associated with the Central Cossack Troops. However, the news website added that bailiffs search all visitors as they enter the courtroom. While this case was under consideration, Svidirov was not held under guard or house arrest, but he was restricted from traveling outside Moscow, and he also had pleaded non-guilty. The defendant's attorney, by the way, told Interfax that he believed Svidirov's suicide was a reaction to his sentence, noting that his legal team was expecting an acquittal. The thing is that this just shows, if you listen to my prison episode, in what a bad and terrible state all this stuff is. Because if you work in the system itself, then you know that 3 years is way too much. Even 3 days might be way too much. And if you work in the system that is connected with the courts, then obviously you also know what's going to happen to you once you get to prison, and that's going to be worse than death. He expected acquittal, but he didn't get one, which apparently surprised him a lot, because, well, extortion's one thing, but these people, well, they get promotions for literally beating up and arranging tortures for the imprisoned. And this guy wasn't up for snuff, and, well, if one of the people who work in that system and are known for torturing and inhuman treatment of the prisoners, of out of which many are political, with any real fault behind them, then, yeah, pretty much it is to be expected that he most likely knew, you know, that that was going to happen to him, like, after he's released from the court and is put into prison, then, yeah, he probably wouldn't have lasted there for a few days. But to talk about the people that get put into prison by the guys like Svidarov, who then manage them and who extort money and who in general torture them, that is another interesting case that kind of ties into this, because it really clearly shows that, well, why someone in prison in Russia might not be, you know, super interested in civilized actions, because some bizarre things happen. See, on February the 10th, the FSB completed its investigation in the treason. Check this out. Treason case against people in Kaliningrad, which used to be Königsberg and should be, residents Antonina Zimina and her husband Konstantin Antonyats. The couple stands accused of blowing an FSB agent's cover to, check this out, Latvian intelligence services. This is so great. I'm reading something. This is insane. And there's like Latvian intelligence services. And I'm like, we have some. They work. It's great. Well, apparently we do. And Estonians, Lithuanians have them as well. But hey, you never hear about them on the news. They like to keep a super low profile. But apparently this couple here stands convicted of treason in Russian courts to blowing the information to literally Latvian intelligence services. According to Zimina's father, the agent was an old college friend of hers who was invited to her wedding. The father of the bride told the newspaper Kommersant that during the festivities, the agent got himself utterly devastatingly drunk, he talked about his work, he took photos with other guests, and literally gave out kind of cards, which literally showed him as an agent of FSB. When the photos subsequently appeared on social media and television, which happened also like in Latvia and Lithuania, Russian officials opened a criminal case against Zimina and Antonyats. The FSB agent himself appears not to be legally implicated, even as a witness. Like, no one even tried to say, hey dude, you're gonna get punished, you're supposedly an undercover agent in the Baltics for the FSB, and you got shit-wasted at the party and did stupid things, but instead we're gonna try to put in court the people who literally invited you for a wedding. It's insane. Before she was arrested, Antonina Zimina worked as an independent expert for the Gorchakov Foundation for Public Diplomacy. Well, she was apparently an expert in our Baltic countries. She led the Baltic Center for Cultural Dialogue, which organizes joint events between Russia and, well, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. That's sort of normal, because it's not like we actively try to hate each other. There's a lot of cooperation, too, specifically when it comes to academia or universities, because, hey, one thing that's true is that we're neighbors, and just because our governments hate each other doesn't mean the people do. Like, we actually like to cooperate, and we have a lot of projects working together. As long as they don't involve Ukraine or policies or something, but, you know, art and culture and academia, that's very much fine, and people like that. And Zimina's husband, Konstantin Antonyats, worked at the Moscow law firm. So, Zimina was arrested on treason charges in the summer of 2018. Investigators argued that she had unmasked an undercover FSB agent to Latvian intelligence. The diplomatic expert argued that the only piece of evidence in her case was a photo from her wedding to Antonyats in 2015. In the summer of 2019, a year after his wife was arrested, and we just found out about this now, it's February 2020, okay, and she's been sitting arrested since the June 2018, it's crazy. So in the summer of 2019, Antonyats was also taken in on treason charges, and we just hear about this right now. Like, it's just come out, and it's just stupid. See, with both members of the couple under guard, Konstantin Zimin, who is Zimin's father, told the news outlet Novy Kaliningrad that the FSB agent involved in the case had studied law with his daughter at Baltic Federal University. Zimin invited the FSB officer to her wedding, which also included several of her Latvian friends. So Konstantin Zimin said that during the course of the celebration, the agent had, quote, a good amount of drink, and, quote, was showing off to the Latvians by saying that he was an FSB agent. Now, in normal cases, you would be basically looking at someone who gets super wasted at a party and claiming that, yeah, guys, I totally work for the Secret Service. But this guy went one step further. It's like, you don't believe me? Let me show you my business card. No, guys, I am totally an undercover agent sent in from Russia to spy in your country. And that's so cool. No, like, literally, how drunk do you have to be in a wedding party that you literally show off to your, like, friends that, hey, I'm the guy who's sent in to spy in your country. What a big, great joke, right? I don't even know, but apparently that has happened. And I didn't see it personally, but apparently our television has showed it on air, too. And still from the father of the arrested, quote, when I asked how my daughter had blown an FSB agent's cover, I was told that she had used a computer to transfer image on him. The FSB is alleging that Antonina somehow confirmed to the Latvians that her friend who was at the wedding was an active FSB officer. If we're to believe the investigators, then basically the Latvians asked her whether it was true that her friend from the wedding was an FSB agent, and she said yes. Antonina is saying it was him who was trying to find a way to snitch on her, Zimin said. He also stated that the treason case against his son-in-law was fabricated as well. Zimin's attorney, Ivan Pavlov, also told Novi Kaliningrad that the charges against his client are, well, unfounded. According to Pavlov, investigators have not demonstrated that the defendant had any ties to Latvian intelligence, and that, well, according to his actions, literally everybody knew about her friend's job even before the wedding. Because apparently this dude was the kind of secret agent who just cannot keep his mouth shut about his job because he thinks it's the coolest thing on the planet. Especially when drunk. And I mean, if you think about all this stuff, I mean, we have a lot of movies here in the Soviet era and about like Soviet spies and whatnot. And one of them is like Stieglitz, where this Russian officer is like infiltrating Gestapo and he's pretending to be one of the German agents. And then his kind of evil counterpart, Professor Miller, who, like, needs to root him out. He spends, like, a whole episode asking him various complex, very deep questions to try and to confirm that the Stieglitz guy, he's a Soviet agent. And the Stieglitz never fails. Well, if we would believe that, you know, things happen like that back in Soviet era, then all you had to do was get him really drunk and maybe party in the wedding. And he'll, like, you know, he'd probably take pictures of all the underground movement as well. And just be like, oh, no, no, Mr. European people, these are my buddies over there, and that dude, Smirnov, no, he's responsible for the communications. Ah, what a funny guy, always smuggles in the best vodka. But yeah, that there dude, Hans, yeah, he's a traitor, he gives us all our ammunition.
Then you kind of arrest everyone who's, like, involved in the fact that looking at a totally wasted FSB agent who doesn't know what he's doing, just spewing out stuff. This is just weird, because these whole inconsistencies and the sheer madness, which is highlighted by both Zimina's father and her attorney, totally did not stop FSB from bringing its investigation to completion, however. Reminder, the guy who was an agent of the FSB who got wasted completely at a wedding party and literally gave out everyone his business cards, took photos, and openly yelled while drunk that he's literally an FSB agent is not being sued. The people who got married and then basically posted the pictures and videos of their wedding on social media, and that has somehow ended up on Latvian and Lithuanian news, because apparently we do have a lot of Latvian and Lithuanian people in Lithuania, and we find this stuff hilarious. Well, yeah, they're being tried for treason, not the guy who basically caused the whole mess. Anonymous sources initially notified TASS and Interfax that the case was moving on to the post-investigative stage. One TASS source indicated that Zimina stands accused of, quote, sending a photograph of her FSB agent friend to Latvia over the internet. The agency did not specify Antonina's alleged role in the case. TASS reported that both husband and wife have pleaded not guilty and that they both face a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. Yeah, I guess they would have a massive, massive bone to pick with people like Svivorov, who shot himself on the court, because, yeah, dudes, it's like you just get married and post your pictures on social media and look what happens. On February the 11th, Kommersant wrote that Zimina and Antonets are only being accused on one count of treason for revealing the identity of a man named Maxim, who worked in the Kaliningrad division of the FSB. And apparently this agent, who again, I repeat once again, he managed to spill all the beans on everything on his own accord, he had reached the rank of captain. And some evidence indicates he worked in counterintelligence, was in good terms with his handlers. And this is just crazy, because everyone states that, no, we all knew what his work was, and he just showed everyone that. And this is the real insanity, because, hey, some bizarre systems probably need to stay bizarre. But when talking about agents and FSB and state security, I want to turn to probably, well, the last and the darkest theme of today's episode. It's about World War II. Because, well, since I mentioned that on my book review episode, I can't get rid of it. Because some bizarre things are happening. Because apparently, according to Mr. Putin, blame Poland out of all places.
Hey guys, Annette here. I hope you are enjoying our new episode of The Eastern Border. As always, a big thank you to all of our Patreons. The show would not be possible without your help. If you are not a Patreon and would like to become one, head over to the Eastern Border page on patreon.com. Please remember to also follow us on our social media, like Twitter, where we are known as Eastern_Border, and on our Facebook page. We also have a Discord server, so if you're interested in that, find the link in the description of this podcast. That's it for now. See you online.
This podcast brought to you by RussianVoiceovers.eu. Enjoy.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, let's finally move on to our, well, slightly bigger brother to the south of the Baltics that has a very bizarre ties with the rest of the Baltics. People who think that Međimurje is a very awesome and cool idea, even though no one asked us in the Baltics how we would fit in that. The thing is, in late 2019, Mr. Putin repeatedly criticized Poland for its role early in World War II. I mean, it does take a special kind of bizarreness to yell at Poland for World War II, specifically when, well, they were the people invaded, well, first by the Nazis, and then, 2 weeks later, by the Soviets, which then held a military parade together, but that really doesn't seem to bother anyone at this point. The thing is, the Russian president has even promised to write an article ahead of Victory Day's 75th anniversary, where he will lay out his own views about the events of the late 1930s. Several years ago, Mr. Putin stopped publicly condemning the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, which, by the way, was the foundation of why the USSR could invade half of Poland, take Bessarabia from Romania, and why the Winter War could happen, because they had split their spheres of influence with then their buddy-buddy Hitler. See, the thing is that Putin has recently returned to this subject, focusing all he has on the Polish people. This could be related to the fact that Putin was not invited to Warsaw last year to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the war's start, but, you know, cutting tragedy where the Soviet KGB officers literally shot off all the elite of Putin officers, and then also totally were not responsible about the death of the Polish president and most of their government when they were flying to cut in memorial events. Yeah, that totally is not a Russia at all. It's just bizarre. The people who supply the Russian president with his historical information have a long, and I mean really long, history of invoking anti-Polish rhetoric, and the Polish state itself actively uses historical memory for political purposes. but they literally were invaded from two sides by the Nazis and by the Soviets, who had previously literally signed a paper that they would do exactly that, and then they did that, and that's how World War II started. It's amazing. See, late last month, Vladimir Putin visited Jerusalem and attended the World Holocaust Forum, where the Yad Vashem World Holocaust Remembrance Center made a video presentation about the start of the Second World War. However, and for this, they later, after the Putin's visit, they made a very public statement where they apologized about all their actions, stated that they were politically motivated, and stated that, yeah, we had to do this because, well, Benjamin Netanyahu was literally trying to save a Israeli person held in prison in Russia from war crimes, and they wanted to look good to Putin. And I'm not making this up, that's literally what was basically stated. Well, not in direct words, but if you read the statement by the center, which is what why they apologized, because they made a video presentation about the start of the Second World War that did not mention the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and featured inaccurate maps of Poland, which Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union carved up in 1939. I love such news, it fills me with warmth and happiness, and just morale is soaring, and, you know, happiness is mandatory, so I'm still smiling, and I hope that no one's gonna shoot me in the head for this, or ice pick me, you know, just saying. And like I said, the museum later apologized for literally sharing distorted, wrong information, lying, and ignoring historical topics to, quote, and this is the literal quote, to spare the Russian president's feelings. That's not a joke. They literally stated that they basically, we lied and cheated and distorted the truth just to make Mr. Putin feel nice because of political reasons. Why not? Does this even happen these days? Well, apparently it does. So in late 2019, Mr. Putin spoke on multiple occasions about the Polish authorities' cooperation with Nazi Germany in the 1930s. On December 20th, at the meeting with Commonwealth of Independent States leaders, the Russian president gave a short lecture about the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and the Munich Agreement when Britain and France consented to Germany's annexation of the Sudetenland. Putin devoted a significant chunk of the speech to Putin's role at the start of the war. At a defense ministry event on December 24th, Putin called Polish ambassador to Nazi Germany, Josef Lipitsky, a bastard and an anti-Semitic pig, saying that Lipitsky spoke approvingly of the persecution of the Jews in 1938. The next day, the president of Russia returned to the issue at a meeting with leaders from the State Duma and Federation Council and representatives of big business. Until recently, the subject of Poland in the context of the start of World War II did not seem to bother Mr. Putin. The Russian president had spoken repeatedly over the years about the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and its secret protocols that, well, exactly did what they were supposed to do, divided up Poland and the Baltic states between Germany and the Soviet Union. In the past decade, however, Putin's, well, position has changed significantly. But now I have to mention this Josef Lipitsky. Well, he was just doing some realpolitik here, and this whole debacle about Putin coming up and yelling at him ended up with literally the chief rabbi of Poland coming out and saying that, of course, mistakes were made, and yes, the Polish ambassador kind of did speak openly about the plan of, well, resettling the Polish Jews and whatever, but the thing is, it's been open in Poland since the collapse of the World War II. It's been studied, and no one denies that, and people have looked for reasons of this, one of which was the fact that, well, Poland was diplomatically trying to make some concessions to the Nazi Germany not to get invaded, and not that they really liked this idea, and the documents haven't been hidden, responsibility has been taken. And basically, the chief rabbi of Poland stated that if only Russia would open up its archives just the way Poland has and would take its own responsibility for their war crimes and for the fact that they did wrong, we would live in a better world. Which they haven't, obviously, because, yeah, the Polish ambassador to Nazi Germany did state some things which we would find in today's situation extremely controversial. However, the responsibility has not been denied. And it's been taken, and it's been analyzed by reputable historians and analysts throughout the ages, and, well, it's a harsh, really bad subject of Polish history, but it's been accounted for. But blaming this trying to stay independent from the Nazis and the Soviets part, it's realpolitik, and it's not pretty, but hey, at least it's being done, and no one's saying it was a good thing.
In 2009, in an article published in the independent Polish newspaper Gazeta Wyborcza, Putin described the 1939 aggression pact in fairly unambiguous terms. Quote, "Without any doubt, we have good reason to condemn the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact concluded in August 1939. But a year earlier, France and Britain signed an infamous agreement with Hitler in Munich, destroying all hope for creating a united front against fascism. Today we understand that any form of collusion with the Nazi regime was morally unacceptable and without any chance of practical implementation." That was 11 years ago. By 2015, Putin had come to a very different assessment of Moscow's deal with Hitler. Quote, "The pact was about ensuring the security of the Soviet Union. That was the first thing. And here's the second. I'll remind you of that after the signing of the corresponding Munich Agreement, Poland itself took actions aimed at annexing part of Czech territory. So after the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and the partition of Poland, the country itself ended up the victim of the same policy that it had tried to pursue in Europe," Putin said at a meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel on May 10th, 2015. In December 2019, Putin recalled the non-aggression pact on several occasions. Quote, "Stalin didn't claim himself with direct contact with Hitler, but the leaders of France and Great Britain met with him and signed papers together. Yes, the Molotov-Ribbentrop pact and secret protocols were signed. That's true. Is that good or bad? I'll draw your attention. This is important now. To the fact that the Soviet Union was the last. It was the last state in Europe that signed an aggression pact with Germany. Everyone else had already signed one. So what was the USSR supposed to have done? Take on Germany by itself?" Putin said at its annual press conference on December 19th. Oh boy, that statement is bad and inaccurate and just wrong on so many levels. But we'll get to that eventually. The president later recalled that Poland itself participated in the partition of Czechoslovakia and helped create, quote, "a whole group for aggression." Putin added that the Soviet troops entered Polish territory only after the Polish government lost control of its armed forces and control over what was happening on Poland's territory. Of no small part, being actually helped by the Soviets to lose said control. And this is just crazy. They're just doing this all over. Because even though the Soviets had a huge part of responsibility about, well, literally everything happening, no one seems to care, and this falsification of history, well, it shall continue. Because, obviously, although Putin does not like Hitler, and he doesn't like Lenin, he is a big fan of Stalin, though. He likes the Stalinist ideology, and he'll continue to spew out bullshit about how, basically, the Soviets were the utter absolute good guys, and that's not even including the myths that are, well, around the opposition that I listen to sometimes in Russian news that state that it actually was the British working with the Nazis that spawned the World War II to basically destroy the Soviet Union. Yes, the British actually apparently worked with the Nazis to start World War II to destroy the Soviet Union. And they failed, so now the Soviets, according to these people, should celebrate their victory over the British as much as over the Germans. And yeah, that is as insane as it sounds. But all this conspiracy, that's for another day. First off, I really need to get my script back, because, oh boy, with a massive headache and a lot of troubles with my health, I can't really, you know, talk about that today, but as soon as I get my stuff back, the episode about the spy boat's coming. But again, I'll remind you, and I'm sorry that I have to do this, please do support the show. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theeasternborder, or just click the donate button on theeasternborder.lv, or just email us at theeasternborder@gmail.com if you want to help in some other way, and it's going to be really nice, because, well, I just, you know, want to continue on the show, but I hope all of this will sort out on its own, and I'm finally really be happy to back to recording and doing some work. До свидания, товарищи, and see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Eastern Border. If you have any comments or specific details you'd like to know, you're welcome to leave it in the comment section on our site, theeasternborder.lv, and we'll rummage even to the western border to find you an answer. Like this podcast? Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on our RSS feed. Happiness is mandatory. Good reviews and donations feed the farmers of our kolkhoz in the great motherland. The Eastern Border salutes you.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org for more shows like this one. The Dark Myths Void.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.